a general lesson in all of these markets, and particularly the ones that are most like the US, sometimes approaching things from a little bit more of a greenfields mentality allows you to discover things that are as critical to the business as higher spend and mm-hmm. average order value. Mm-hmm. And to be aware of, almost like create a playbook or a book of plays for the assumptions that are made into the core business. Mm-hmm. Because if one can approach things with a little bit more of an open mind, you might lead to more growth, higher order values, repeat customers, all the things that you do care about as like growth metrics, lower churn, all of the things, you might actually be able to discover something from the outset that like positions you even better for longer term growth within that market. And again, will then trickle back into the core business growth thinking.
Here at Levels, we're building tech that helps people to understand their metabolic health, and this is your front row seat to everything we do. This is a whole new level. Hey listeners, Ben Grenell here, part of the early startup team at Levels. I lead growth with the team and had a chance to sit down with Andy Schauvelman, one of the earliest investors in Levels, who leads the fund 4033, a real tongue twister to say. Anyway, Andy's had a storied career. He's worked with Google, Airbnb, and even Fiverr. And he spent a lot of time in international expansion. And so earlier this summer, we ended up having a jam session where we sat down and we were riffing on what does international expansion look like when we're ready to take it on with Levels? What is the way we'll approach it? And the takeaway was, have a book of plays. Don't have a playbook, have a book of plays. Now, this might sound semantic, but there's a lot of nuance in it, and it's something that has resonated with our team, has been woven into the conversations as we've started to think about what does it look like post-launch. Once we get to launch in the US, what does it look like if we start to think about international expansion? And the real insight was, you can't approach every country in the same way. Now, maybe this sounds naive to say, but because of different demographics, because of different geographic considerations, because of different cultural values, all countries need to be treated and approached in a very different way. There might be some overlap in the Venn diagram of the approach, but no two countries are going to be the exact same. So it was a really meaningful conversation, and we didn't plan on releasing this as a podcast, but here it is. Here's Andy.
First thing that got me into Airbnb back in the day, and what that original team that kind of led to, I think, its massive growth was this idea of people coming together to share in that social contract. We were commenting the idea that the world was no longer a place where people were interacting face to face and having to go through some of those discomforts. But it was those discomforts that also would lead to extreme highs in travel, you know, through the And it was those extreme highs that then led to people speaking about us to their friends, to 50 of their friends rather than two of their friends, if they had just had a decent experience or a good experience or one that was aligned with hotel experience.
Yeah. And that becomes that somewhat flywheel effect where it's like your growth becomes word of mouth. Did you work with Gustav on a lot of the growth stuff?
I wouldn't say that I worked a lot with Gustav, but I mean, I obviously knew who he was, but I was more on the international side of things. So I would go and open up physical markets. And I definitely worked with an internal product team to productize the internal tools that our sales and warm sales teams were using in these local markets. But what I was really good at was arriving in a place, hiring the team, figuring out what the legal and regulatory issues were and getting an office up and running in something crazy like 3 weeks. So we opened up 12 offices in 11 countries in something like 7 months.
Nice.
And that was like my skill, because I would just sort of arrive in a place and I'd go to a doner kebab spot in Berlin and I'd hear Spanish. I'm like, oh, we need to hire Spaniards in Berlin So I just go up to the group at the table and I'd be like, hey, you know, we're looking to hire at the, you know, would you come on board? And then all of a sudden you'd go down these rabbit holes and the world would kind of open up for you and you'd meet the right person. You'd meet the regulatory person you needed to meet. And all of a sudden, boom, we were up and running. And I just sort of like believed in that sort of like synchronicity of just going and hustling and making it work. And then at the end of the day, hiring people that could also speak the language of and transmit the language of Airbnb being this company that represented something greater than just something transactional. So for example, yeah, just talking to hosts in a way that was going to let them know, yeah, you're going to make money, but like, that's a byproduct of expressing your creativity in your place, the love of your home, going above and beyond. Those kinds of things were much more important than the transactional. And in fact, there were markets like Miami's that never took off because they were always from the outset so focused on transactional. We went after property managers early on in Miami and the market never took off still to this day. And we learned early on that there was a right mix of professional, casual, and semi-professionals in order to be able to build a market with that flywheel effect.
Nice. Were you, when you were traveling internationally, were you relaying back to the product team everything for localization? Like, hey, the product, even if we want to maintain a universal code base with a product that we just localize from a language perspective and maintain the brand, were you relaying back certain things like, hey, we have to localize the product this way because the needs are so different?
Yeah. I mean, I would argue that doing that before doing localization is more important because you learn a lot more about what the, in the case of Airbnb or in Fiverr, the real trust barriers were to people joining you or using you. So, you know, for example, at Fiverr, when I decided to enter the German market, we just were curious why people were falling out even during the login screen. And yeah, just by meeting people on the ground and asking questions, you realized, oh, it turns out Germans are really skeptical of Facebook and Google as a company. And so when you put them as your login mechanism, they'll drop off. And they needed to feel, they needed to hear and see GDPR compliance. You needed to have like the special page that talked about who your general manager was in the location of the office called the Impressum. Germans needed deadlines more so than other markets. They didn't like the shift between pricing when they would look at a gig to when they would check out, and invoicing didn't work for them. These are things that we learned by working with the existing group, like in Berlin that spoke English, and that it was more important to solve for them first than to go and localize and then add in another layer of variables to solve for.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring that up. The last company that I was a part of, we got acquired by a company out of the UK, ended up a couple years later having a merger with a company based out of the Netherlands. So we were acquired by a publicly traded company on the UK exchange, merged with a company that was publicly traded based out of the Netherlands. And the way that they're, even though you still think it's like Europe, like both are in Europe, yeah, the way that as you got further east in Europe, that you would present information to consumers was completely different. So you would go to this company's homepage, massive company. And it was basically like information about the company, like lots of text and pictures that talk exactly what you're saying, where it's like talking about like the managing director or the CEO of that country's involvement and care for the business and all this stuff. Whereas in North America, it's so transactional that you're like, literally get me like the CTA. Like I want to jump on that page and I want to be like book Airbnb, book Fiverr. You want to avoid the pleasantries, but no, it's totally the complete opposite where it just didn't work like that. So it was such a weird juxtaposition between like switching your mind and being like, this doesn't look like it works, but having to understand like, oh, this is the only way to make it work in these countries. It's Really interesting.
Yeah, totally. I have an experience that when we entered into the Indian market for Airbnb, we were just like flabbergasted why the Indians were like, you'd even watch them use the screen and they were like, they were confused. And what it boiled down to after like hours and hours of feedback, they were confused by the simplicity. Like the Indian website at the time had all these like flashing lights and busyness, and it was the busyness and the flashing lights that allowed them to very quickly understand where they needed to go and what part of the screen was important for them and what wasn't.
Interesting.
And our, like, they didn't, like, the simplicity of it was confusing for them. And it was kind of, that was kind of interesting. But yeah, Airbnb was different because, well, I guess already it was assumed that you were going to be engaging in English for the most part because of the international aspect at the outset. I mean, we did start doing some minimal translation, but it wasn't like anything too deep. We didn't force translations within messaging at the time, and that was sufficient. I mean, Fiverr, same for now.
Yeah, does Fiverr have a localized product based on language, or is it just if you land on the Fiverr.com website, you might, and you search Spanish and English, you might find people that are like Spanish translators, or do you localize it?
When I left, they were starting to localize, and that was actually kind of why I left, because they took the international project to be about translation rather than these localized teams. And that's a project management effort. And also, you can't just do localization, meaning if you're going to do localization, you have to support it with like a pretty large marketing effort to sort of make sure that you're reaching out to people that are going to be able to use it in the same language, and that you get the awareness out, and so, and you need to get the landing pages, and you do the SEO correctly and all that stuff. Like it's not sufficient just to localize. And the attitude at Fiverr was like, you know, it was like, if we build it, they will come kind of thing.
Oh, interesting.
And so I just sort of saw the other ways in which they would do product development was often to launch things, but not support them. And whatever would stick, that's what they would invest in. But that's not actually what it needs to be like for a product that you believe in, like translating the website. You actually need to invest in it as it's, you know, to develop it, not just sort of see if it works kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
Use that as the metric.
Yeah. That the localization for campaigns is so key. And it's one of the, it became a bit of a debate, like from past experience, where the UK company that acquired us was like, hey, we were one of 18 subsidiaries, all the same business line. It was on demand. Mm-hmm. We're going to get economies of scale by blanket strategying the whole world. All 18 of you are getting the same campaign. And all we're going to do is re-record the VO, right? Because assume it was like, let's just make it up. It was like there's some campaign where it was like B-roll video and you could just change out the VO, done deal. Yeah. Like scrappiest, easiest way to localize a campaign. Uh-huh. And we're like, hey, that's just not the way it works. Like you can't, it's not going to be effective for a number of reasons. You need to target people based, because there are two sides. Sorry, let me rewind. There's like localizing the product from a translation standpoint. We had unified code base where it was like, try to keep the product relatively the same. So when you're pushing updates to 18, because we ran the tech for all the subsidiaries, push it out, all the subsidiaries that had the same business model, push it out, done deal. Who cares about like translations? The only thing you worry about. We're like on the marketing side of things, you gotta nail the campaign. Otherwise, you're just dumping money out. And they're like, no, this is gonna work. When we went through the merger, then it was like, let's go back to the idea of making sure that in Spain they feel like it is a Spanish campaign, totally different than this. Like, there's no unified campaign base that works for the world.
Yeah,
so it's funny to hear that everything that you're saying, because it's exactly true. You can't just push this campaign globally and be like, oh, this is going to work, and expect translations the answer.
Right. I mean, and that's kind of, you know, that's the argument that I've made in the past when there have been companies that have been like, hey, we want to hire you for internationalization. And I'm like, okay, well, my style is, you know, this very localized boots on the ground thing. So I don't add a whole lot of value if you're trying to do like this language localization. And you know, I can tell you which partners I would recommend to use, but you don't need me for that. Mm-hmm. And that's always like the interesting, there's always two different styles of that kind of market growth, which is like, let's do full on boots on the ground with like a company wide effort to do it because we recognize its importance, or this like part and parcel kind of approach, which could be done from HQ. And sometimes I think it does work for companies, and it can work for companies if there's a lot of scalability built into the business model. But you know, I'm curious, you know, what you're running, what you're thinking about with Levels specifically, like where are you in that? Is it about pushing to different markets internationally? Is it about just building this base that's in the US, or how are you thinking about it?
Oh, so all of the above. First we have to get to launch in the US. JM, so Josh Moyer, who's on that email thread that Sam put us all into, he is head of global operations. So he's overseeing international expansion when we go down the path. Right now, there's a little bit of exploration as far as international markets, but nothing as far as day-to-day execution. Like, we're not tactically trying to launch Australia at the same time as US. We're like, let's get to launch in the US first because we have to, but there's still effort going on in, and a lot of it has to do with regulation, right? The regulation for CGMs in Canada is totally different than the US, where you're just like, what, over the counter versus prescription? Okay, this changes things. So, and then lump in one other side of things, the infrastructure side, which is like fulfillment infrastructure, where because of regulation in the US, we work with TruPill, right? Cool. They take care of all the doctor consults. They take care of the actual distribution of the CGMs. We don't worry about it. In Canada, like, they don't have, TruPill doesn't have a network. You also don't need TruPill. You just need a cloud pharmacy. So it's that, like, all of these things. And then how does our product experience change? It's not drastic because it just becomes like a part of the flow, but it's still, there are considerations. So it's not like Walmart where they're like, okay, we know this 20,000 square foot store. Here's the exact spec. We just need the land. Like, we'll go set it up, merchandise the exact same. It's a lot. There are more considerations. So we're going down the path, but we got to get to launch in the US first.
I suspect, by the way, that I suspect that the levers that you're pulling now for growth, like, say, for example, like you mentioned podcasts, and I'm sure there's an online presence and whatever it is, like, the, you know, you'll have different buckets of growth that you'll go down and you'll realize in the US work for you. And you probably maybe even have like an order of operations for those levers. And I bet what you can do at this point, as far as it pertains to growth outside of the US, is sort of just like playbook it. I mean, as much as possible, like the order of operations and the buckets. And then as you sort of like plan the next move, then I suspect, because it always happens, that some of the levers will change, but more importantly, the order of operations will change. Like, what you do first to kind of like, sometimes I don't know for a fact, but I would imagine that if Germans were hearing things from, you know, workout influencers first, that probably wouldn't work for them. They probably need to hear from doctors first, right? That's just like and then once doctors come in, then you need workout people. Just like, just thinking that like the order of ops in each culture might be different, but you'll probably use some of the same levers. So keeping in mind what levers and the buckets of levers, so that then you can kind of like move those pieces around for when you're going into a new market.
Yeah, interesting. It's good to jam on this because this is the nature of moving fast. We don't spend tons of time jamming on this stuff. It's more like, we'll think about it, but we'll keep semi-punting it. So having almost like a working session where you're like, oh yes, two people can put their minds together and have a conversation about it. It's like, you're very right that we don't know what we don't know, in the sense of like, do Germans on average listen to podcasts and do they resonate with them? Because in the US, we know that's like a major channel for not just Levels, but tons of consumer facing brands. You have 45 minutes of attention, hour of attention.
Right.
You trust the host. But to your point, in Germany, it might be like, nope, I need an, and I'm making this up, I need inside sales from somebody who calls me and says, hi, this is Dr. Andy. I'm calling you to let you know about Levels, because that gives them the trust. We don't know that, but it's a good point because it's so easy to forget that you can't just run a playbook. Like, we know that you can't run a playbook, but internationally you have to like think about, oh yeah, it's not just campaign, it's the actual playbook.
Yeah, I mean, I often push back with, you know, whenever I've worked for people that are like, let's come up with, our goal is to come up with a playbook. And I'm like, yeah, let's come up with like a book with a lot of plays. And then determine like the ones that we need to use, but it's not going to look exactly the same as the US, and that's scary for sometimes, like for a company, because it equals like that there will be a period of time and money expenditure of exploration, but there's ways to do that in smart ways. But that was definitely, I've always worked in situations where there's a core strong business and a very established growth machine within that business, and then you're going back into the basics of the basically the inception story, and then replicating that in the new market, but then realizing along the way that actually this new market is an opportunity to rediscover organic growth in ways that the growth machine had kind of like forgotten or moved away from, and then using the organic growth that we're finding in this new market to then inform the core business of ways to do organic growth within the core business. So that's another opportunity that happens when one does international growth, which is that it can often reinform and reinvigorate the core business to be more sensitive towards organic growth when it's already kind of gone down its established growth paths.
Yeah. It's such a good point. So with the company that I was with, we're a Canadian based company. We launched, I've been part of two companies that where we've done Quebec launches, and you have to treat Quebec like a different country just because it's French. Like, not only is it French speaking, but different regulation. Like, there's advertising regulation as far as it's different than other countries where you can just go language and that's fine. In Quebec, you have to treat it where there's both French and English, but they have to be a different percentage.
it's totally crazy.
But well, like the last one that we did, when we launched, we treated it because we had become a national brand at that point and had like strong brand recognition, like working with NHL and things where you assume like everyone knows you're in one country. And it was a bit naive almost on our part because we went middle of the funnel. And we're just like, oh, consideration, even though we are called, we had a different brand name, but same brand colors, treatment, just in localized to French. And we were trying to run like middle of the funnel campaign. And it was like, oh no, we got to go back to square one and re-educate with the foundational story of like who we are, what we do. Cause people actually A, don't have an idea, and B, don't care. And then once we got to the consideration and conversion part of the funnel, like call it, let's say it took 6 or 8 months to sort of, it was a pretty quick ramp up just because there was some national trust. We were doing spots nationally with John Hamm, but in Quebec, what resonates with them is like radio hosts and like reality TV stars. It's literally insane. So it wouldn't matter if Hamm was talking in French. They didn't want Hamm because Hamm is not one of them. It's like so bonkers, but then that gets back to your point of like knowing the market and then knowing what the conversion mechanism is. So it's like you have a book with lots of plays, but it's just not like, here's our playbook. And it's a good lesson to learn. Cause you're like, you could call it a mistake or a learning opportunity, but it's like, you know, that's not going to be done again. Like, we're not now with Levels. It's like, we're not going to make a mistake like that. That would be just naive. I mean, we're going to screw up tons,
of course,
but we know not to do it. You know?
I would argue like Well, and maybe it's different for something that has more logistics involved, but in some of the software, soft tech, like marketplaces that I was used to building, some of the hardest countries to launch were actually the UK and Canada, partly because I think it was harder to convince the executive teams that the approach needed to kind of go back to square one, because the assumption is much like it's already baked into the system that Canada and the UK are going to operate like the US.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's also harder to pay attention to the signals, because you already have a little bit of confirmation bias, because you're working within the same sort of like cultural group.
Totally.
Yeah, grouping. Yeah. So it makes you less likely to be aware of the things that are going to lead to people just absolutely loving you, which is like, actually, as non-scientific as that is, that was always the thing that I would hire for. I would hire for people that were attuned to being able to listen to what was something that was going to allow someone to use your product and be blown away on such a deep level. And that was like hiring for people that had that sensitivity to be able to tune out just like, yeah, we want people to like the product, but likability and transactional kind of considerations were good, but not as good as, say, for example, like the daughter of someone who has diabetes being able to, you know, help her father out, you know, in some capacity, and like the joy that it would bring her to have her be able to have a solution to help her father. That was much more powerful sometimes than, say, like trying to think of like a 20-year-old who's, you know, who's a high performance athlete who's like trying to that's not necessarily the case, but I don't know the specifics of the levels world, but sometimes like pinpointing the thing that would lead to the most emotionality in the in product usage was a great trail to follow in terms of growth, and then kind of like deviate from there, and obviously taking brand considerations in that process. But yeah, that was something I was always attuned to, both for myself and in hiring, like, and to also not assume too much into a market. So that those kind of like personalities that could kind of like deal with that more art form piece of growth rather than the scientific piece, that was always really important for me.
When you think about markets like Australia, UK, Canada, US, anything that is sort of your flag, your tent pole, where you're like, if there is one thing that you're gonna like anchor on, where Canada is so different than the US with this, UK was so different, and this is just based on experience, Airbnb, Fiverr, like anything that you saw where you thought within those markets when you went there, where you were like, holy shit, like Australians just don't do X the same as the US? Or was it, granted, like, here's a challenge with comparing Fiverr to Airbnb, is network without geographic constraints versus network with are totally different. But from the consumer standpoint, it's more from the, not from the operational standpoint, more from the consumer standpoint.
I'm kind of going to answer your question, which is to say that we were so accustomed at Fiverr for showing the same search results. We were so accustomed to thinking that the user was going to arrive and have the same set of expectations for spend, or for anything, but spend in particular, that we didn't shift the algorithm. We didn't change the product to meet the potential expectations of the customer, and our marketplace reset the expectations for what someone was willing to actually spend in a given market. And we would have been better served approaching that with a little bit more of an open mind in those markets, because we actually probably would have been able to lead to a higher spend. But it was like the UK. Yeah, Fiverr's name, Fiverr, reminds someone in the UK of like a £5 note.
Oh, and yeah.
It's really easy to say that that's the reason why Brits aren't spending as much on your platform. But the thing that would remind Brits of the £5 note was not even the name. It was the fact that they'd arrive on the site and see all these lower cost low prices on the marketplace. And the willingness of a Brit to spend more was actually higher than what they showed when they were first arriving on our site. But we were the ones that were resetting those expectations. And so that's just a general lesson in all of these markets, and particularly the ones that are most like the US, which is that sometimes approaching things from a little bit more of a greenfields mentality allows you to discover things that are as critical to the business as higher spend and mm-hmm. average order value. Mm-hmm. And to be aware of, almost like create a playbook or a book of plays for the assumptions that are made into the core business. Mm-hmm. Because if one can approach things with a little bit more of an open mind, you might lead to more growth, higher order values, repeat customers, all the things that you do care about as like growth metrics, lower churn, all of the things. You might actually be able to discover something from the outset that like positions you even better for longer term growth within that market. And again, will then trickle back into the core business growth thinking.
Mm-hmm. The example of Facebook login in Germany right there yeah. is such a good insight, because it's so easy to just go down a rabbit hole of like, well, maybe Germany's just not a good market for us, when really it's like you have to go so far upstream to be like, oh, it's an amazing market. It's just a silly little button at the beginning of the flow. That's all it is. It's just the heuristic that this market has
yeah.
in general towards this other company that has nothing to do with us. Let's just like take that out of the flow. And then all of a sudden you see, right? So it's like, I think that's such a good lesson and a good takeaway, is always thinking so far upstream about these micro elements as they can pertain to growth, product,
yeah.
engagement, community, all of these things.
And I think if you have a product that allows for that discovery, like for example, at Fiverr and Airbnb, we had search within the product so that we could actually see what people were organically typing in. And in Germany, we could see what people were desiring to use the site for and where we had lower volume of supply, so that we knew that we couldn't mm. match the needs of the market, but we had the inputs that were coming in from the people who were initially engaging with the site or with the marketplace.
Mm,
so that was really valuable too, to be able to incorporate on a product side or on an operation side, because there were operational ways to learn, but like incorporate in the structure of the product or in the organization of the expansion mechanism, really ways to organically learn about your users and what their needs are, and then have like a feedback loop built in so that you can learn.
That's neat. Yeah. Having those insights drive supply side aggregation once you're already established is very cool, because it's counterintuitive to marketplaces where it's like aggregate supply, solve problem for demand and supply side. But using the insight of like, oh, we'll get minimum viable supply, then demand side locally is going to drive all these insights for like back to book with plays, not playbook, because mm-hmm. the heuristic of like, oh, our playbook is first we aggregate, let's use Fiverr. First we aggregate generalists, then we aggregate people who specialize in voiceover. And what you find from the demand side is you're like, man, nobody cares about voiceover in Germany, or everybody yeah. does. You know, it's like this totally, yeah. so you can't just run that, because then you've got the wrong supply for the demand side. You're not going to hit the growth metrics because you're not serving them up the right product. And then everybody, if they jump too far forward in extrapolating an answer, they're like, oh, Germany's not a good market for us. And it's back to like, no, they just don't like voiceover.
Totally.
Yeah. No, that's totally. Super, super interesting. Super interesting. When Jam is starting to run point on, let's say it's Canada, he's looking at it from the ops standpoint, like the infrastructure, and then there'll be yeah. the whole growth book with plays that we decide to run. I think having a Jam session, I'm sure there's yeah. a ton that Jam would, it would probably be beneficial to Jam with him separately on, hey, this is what yeah. I saw from the ops side. And then when it comes back to growth, when we get to it, it's very, very helpful to have these conversations where you can just sort of like jam it out. So I'd appreciate
whenever you want. I'm here for you.
Sweet.